talk because I cut it off. So we have an answer that Tim owes to Renata, and then Bianca wants to ask a question, and then Rafael, and then we move on to panel discussion, and then we'll take questions in general. Okay, do you want to say something?
Yes, so the answer to your question was, or let me repeat your question in my words first. So your question was, isn't this complexity function some arbitrary choice that I make to get an answer? Well, I agree that there are many other functions that you could choose. That would give you the same behavior. What I wanted to say is the motivation for proposing that the arrow of time is the growth of this complexity function is a two-step process. The first thing is that we wanted a physical realization of the idea that the direction of time is the direction of generation of physical records, of localized stable structures that can store information. So basically that we generate time capsules, memory of the past, and this direction is. So we looked for just a simple function that measures that, and that was this. There are many others that do the same thing, and in that sense, it's ambiguous. Yes, you could. I have to honestly say I don't know of a specific function that implements the idea of measuring the amount of clustering in this model that is not increasing, that is not dynamically increasing under the dynamics, but I wouldn't elevate that to a theorem.
Okay, let's keep the technical discussions elsewhere.
They're overly technical. So if I understood correctly, you are still using Newtonian time for your description of the dynamics. Now, you know, if you go to a gravitational system, you know, you would have to use relational time, and then you would use a physical Hamiltonian, and actually you could also, which typically would be actually time dependent, and it could also include a dissipative term, which would generically give you some kind of attractor behavior. So it seems that this kind of behavior might be much more likely if we really consider kind of relational concepts.
That's exactly right. Except your first sentence. So I don't use Newtonian time. I wrote these ratios of interparticle distances over there. They're local coordinates for on shape space. So let's call a complete set of local coordinates QA. And I said, I want to just describe a curve in shape space, just an equation of state or how the curve behaves without reference to any parametrization. So what I can do is I can look at a small change of these. And I find, well, it's a kinematic statement. They're in the direction of the change of shape. So if I parameterize the directions by some angle in shape space, which I call phi, and I calculate the unit tangent vector from that, this is just a kinematic statement. Then I have to look, how do I have to change the direction as I go along the curve? So I look at the phi A, and I get a function that depends, of course, on the point where you are in shape space, on the direction. And if this was inertial dynamics, this would be all. If there were no interparticle forces. When there are interparticle forces at zero energy, you see that this also depends on the curvature of the curve, on how fast the curve, how much the curve bends in shape space. So I have an additional dynamical variable there. And then to close the system, I have to have an equation how this changes, how this bit of data changes. So I hope this answers your question. I'm just looking at the description of the curve in shape space. I'm not talking about any time parametrization. But you're right with the second part of what you asserted, that this uses a particular physical Hamiltonian, which is actually the time dependence of the physical Hamiltonian is expressed in the fact that you have dependence on the curvature of the curve.
Yes, so I think this model is worth thinking about just for the reason, because it is so concrete, as Renata mentioned. So let me say what I think is going on in a way that's maybe more accessible to other people, certainly to me more accessible. And you can see whether you agree or disagree. And I think what's really going on in this model has nothing much to do with shape dynamics or which variables you choose to look at. But it's exploiting a well-known astrophysical instability that you take any system, if you idealize, say, stars as point particles and you take a cluster of stars, in the long run it'll evolve to this so-called core halo structure in which a certain number of the stars will condense and form a core, and taking advantage of that liberated kinetic energy, the halo part of this, some stars will move away and form a halo. Ultimately, they'll be expelled from the system and so on. And I think everyone agrees that with these absolutely standard definitions of entropy, don't think too hard about the gravitational contribution per se, but just doing Newtonian mechanics in ordinary phase space, with the sort of same coarse grainings anyone will use, that process of forming core halos configuration does increase the entropy. In fact, I think that might be how this theory was first understood. Someone computed the entropy, the extremal entropy configuration, and found that it was in fact a saddle point and not a maximum, and then asked themselves how you'd get to higher entropy and saw that you'd form this core. So I think this, to the extent that that's the entropy you're picking up on, I think that is physical entropy. That would be part of my answer also to Renata. So I think what's going on is you're saying take something that looks like just a random collection of stars moving in some way, but with a bound so that they're gravitationally bound, your zero energy configuration. It's very likely, now we're in a time symmetric situation, and so if we evolve forward in time or backward in time, we're going to see the same behavior. And in both directions, the behavior we're going to see is this condensing of some parts of the system and with other parts moving away. And I think that's what your model is basically using. Would you agree with that?
Yes, that's exactly what the particle model exploits. Yes.
It's likely to spread out, but you're still left with the question that it's just as likely to go into the corner as come out. And the way, what you're doing when you're giving that narrative for the galaxy is you're really assuming stuff about incoming particles or outgoing particles. You're putting it in a cosmology, which makes a lot of assumptions about it.
Are you looking at me or
really at you, because that's something I understood. So apparently, I'm open to whoever wants to talk about that. But I think to me, that's part of my claim. So what I believe is that Sean has hidden a lot of assumptions in this infinity, and I think in your narrative, it shows up in that way, that you're really assuming something special about the state to let it freely collapse rather than, have outgoing behavior or have other possible solutions.
Tim Leslie, what words in this
So let me say I agreed to to when you said that this is the attractor that we're exploiting. We put a certain interpretation on this attractor is what I would say is what we added to the discussion.
Entropy in the sense that physicists understand it already.
So,
I don't know, but why should you shy away from this?
I'm not shying away from it. It's just I can't make sense of the word entropy when I just have one system, and when I have a phase space that is for this model, the phase space is infinite. There is because the particles could be. If I'm not talking about relative distances, if I talk about absolute distances, I can have particles that are infinitely far away, and actually the entropic maximum would be the ones where all particles are at infinity, because most spaces are at infinity, and where all particles have infinite momentum, because most momentum spaces are at infinity. So I don't know how to make sense of the concept of entropy. When I have an unbounded system in that sense.
So I think I completely agree with what Tim just said, and I think it's a pick your poison kind of issue. I'm writing this paper with Alan Guth about this kind of thing that we've been writing for the last 5 years. So using typicality within the next 100 years, we should publish the paper. But I think that there's some choices if you want. I mean, Andy's correct. I didn't mean to hide assumptions, but there are assumptions in the thing that you just said. So Alan and my point of view is that the assumptions are pretty mild, that you can get away with infinitely big things if you just explicitly say what it is you're assuming about them. Tim et al. Got rid of infinitely big things by going to this reduced phase space, et cetera. What we're saying is that instead you can make assumptions like there's just a finite number of particles, or you're looking at normalizable distribution functions on this infinitely big phase space. And then you generically get behavior that looks exactly like this for the traditional notion of entropy. And so that's, I would just say, it's not like right or wrong, that's an extra true fact. We've made assumptions about how to deal with infinity that you may or may not like. These guys never had to deal with infinity because they're looking at something different. You may or may not be impressed. But they're both true. I mean, it's math, ultimately.
Okay, so I guess we have transitioned into the general discussion. You had your hand raised, Lee.
So, Sean, we can start with what you're saying, but I want to hear from anybody who wants to speak a clear statement of, has this resolved the issue of the need for a past hypothesis?
No. Has it resolved it? No. I mean, well, for
Tim's,
one thing, I gave...
let me just slow you down.
I gave three options.
Tim's first transparency said a past hypothesis is unnecessary because of blah, 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 what he's going to show us. You argue that you have a result which is analogous to Tim's result. So do you disagree with Tim that this obviates the need for a past hypothesis?
If we clarify the claim a little bit, there's one claim. Is it conceivable to write down well-defined physical systems in which there is naturally the case that entropy increases monotonically at almost every point? That we've resolved. I think that we both agree that entropy or something like it, there are physical systems in which it is natural that rather than fluctuating around a maximum, entropy tends to evolve monotonically for large stretches of time. Whether or not that's the world is long distant from where we are right now. I mean, we're all talking about, I'm talking about abstract Hilbert spaces or Newtonian particles. You know, we want to get the Big Bang out of this, and that's much harder.
Could I argue, Sean, that in your model, the problem of initial conditions is somehow alleviated because now you have these two directions of increasing and decreasing entropy, and what all you need to do is fit a Hubble time in a way that doesn't encompass the flipping of the... So in that sense, if you can make an argument for that, it's somehow alleviated. Of course, it depends on what's the length, if the time is infinite or not, but you could argue that you could place that length of Hubble time, which is what we need to explain.
That's right. So there's... You if you let yourself play these games with infinity, I think that you can write down sets of rules that are consistent and coherent and get you the answer. Whether or not those rules apply to the universe, again, is a different question. So here's a set of rules. So if you have this entropy curve that goes just like in a parabolic shape or a triangle or whatever, it goes up for infinitely far, and you say, well, I have a period of time, 14 billion years. Where do I expect that period of time to lie on this curve? If I pick a finite period that contains the minimum, and I ask, what is the chance that my Hubble time contains that minimum? And I take the limit as the whole period of time I look at gets infinitely big, the probability my Hubble time contains that minimum goes to zero. Is that an interesting thing to calculate? I'm not sure, but at least I think it helps alleviate the naturalness problem in my mind.
To your question, Sean, whether this is really indeed the world, philosophy and science gave us three demons. And let's play an experiment with them. So here is the demon who studied both with Descartes' demon, Maxwell's demon, and Laplace's demon. So it knows the positions and momenta of all the molecules in our galaxy. So it is Laplace. It can reverse, it can control all their moments. So it is Maxwell. And it is obnoxious, so it is Descartes. Now, this is what it does to our galaxy. It orders all the molecules at a certain moment to go backwards, such that everything here, cups of coffee and Lee Smolins and all these things, go backwards. Can we rule out the... Can we rule out the possibility? Do we have any means to rule out the possibility that we indeed live in such a galaxy, that our galaxy is such, subject to this triple demon?
Do you mean that the sort of the entropy goes up for a while and the demon jumps in and the entropy starts going down?
From a certain moment, everything goes down. So, of course, our biological and psychological errors would be reversed together with the thermodynamic error.
Yeah.
This is something that Hawking once pointed out, that if we live in such a universe, we would not be able to tell, right? Because we keep forgetting every moment one thing and our memories of the past become fresh. So we don't know whether we are not undergoing this process now. Can we rule out that our galaxy is subject to such a nasty...
I guess I'm not sure that there's even physical meaning to that question. You know, when I wrote this equation over here for S and delta T could be positive or negative. We can always choose T goes to minus T, and it makes no difference whatsoever. I don't think there's any ontological reality to T increasing or decreasing. The reality is, given the entropy now, has it monotonically changed in a certain period from past to future?
So you're saying that actually we cannot rule out the possibility,
right.
just that it is ridiculous.
Well, I'm saying I'm not sure the possibility is meaningful, therefore I guess we can't rule it out, sure.
Unless, apart from this being ridiculous and so on, you say we cannot rule it out, the possibility that we live in such a galaxy.
So, what is that supposed to show?
Just the question whether time has something which is beyond entropy. The direction of time is more basic than the entropy, the error of entropy.
Good. So my answer to that is that I do not think it is. I do not think there's something more...
So here's one more question. Suppose that the demon did that and came to the year 1963 in which some guys managed to show symmetry breaking at the microscopic level, and then they amplified it. Do you think that it will continue working until then, or it will make no difference?
All this reversibility, it just depends on the reversibility and unitarity of Schrodinger's equation. It depends on the fact that H is, you know, constant in time and Hermitian. It does not... There's no... CPT question or anything like that.
Okay.
Do I misunderstand everything or lose too much by saying that essentially what you guys are saying is question, why doesn't system go to equilibrium and stay there at maximal entropy? Your proposal, well, if there's no maximal entropy, the entropy can increase forever. Is that, that's
yeah,
it?
That's fine.
Nothing else? Is that, that's a, okay, I got it.
We say those words in the paper.
Adam Frank, University of Rochester. I'm an outsider also. I work in computational astrophysics. And so I actually wanted to ask kind of a framing question to the group, which is Marina was raising this issue that, you know, there is, we have these set of metaphysical assumptions about aesthetics or whatever, or about what the equation should look like and about the role with mathematics. And, you know, they lead to a problem. Right, and so this issue of is there a problem is the one I wanted to raise just and see what people think. You know, is the state, current state of cosmology, looking at it from an outside, you know, from the outside, you know, is there a problem? Is there something, you know, so the crisis in physics, as some people have called it. I just want to point one story, which is, doesn't have much meaning, but it speaks to something. I just finished a astronomy textbook, which Sean was part of. It was interviewed in. But you know, we ended up sending it to everybody. And I had a chapter in there on the multiverse and a little bit on string theory. And it was, you know, we sent it to all of the major universities to get feedback, and people demanded that chapter get taken out, or that section get taken out. There was, I couldn't believe, really, even though I'm not a big supporter of the multiverse, but I had it in there because, you know, I think there's cool things about it. But the hostility to it was really quite remarkable. And again, that means nothing for the, what we're discussing today, but I was struck by that. And so this question, you know, Sean, I like raised the issue of ontological extravagance. And so, and or I also like the idea of, you know, radical conservatism. So, you know, A, is there a problem? Does that problem, is it associated with ontological extravagance of either having extra dimensions or more too many universes or whatever? And how do you distinguish between whether or not radical conservatism is the right idea or radical radicalism is the right idea? So that's for everybody.
I could talk, but I'm talking too much.
I shouldn't talk about the multiverse. I guess I have a question. Was this the people that you've sent it to and that demanded that it got taken out? Were there like general public or audio?
No, these were astronomy people in astronomy. This is an astronomy textbook I just finished, an astronomy 101 textbook.
Why would you want to put this in?
Because in the last chapter, right, in the last chapter on cosmology, which is the chapter everybody loves, you know, the students love. And so I included, you know, the multiverse because it's a hot topic. It's great. Students love it. Students love to discuss it. But the professors were like, no, take that out.
Okay, so I'm going to say something and then Shin, I'll give it to you because we're going to...
You send it to the wrong professors. That's the problem.
They were in the other multiverse. That's why you should... So the way I see the proposal of the multiverse is this: the way we do physics is always from repetition and having inferences of laws. And in the case of the one universe in cosmology, we're very uncomfortable because we can't set the ball rolling over and over again and see what's happened. So the issue of initial conditions and cosmological law really doesn't work for us. And we have, in the field, there are different, very different opinions. But for me, I want cosmology to be explained within cosmology. And so the issue of the laws, why these laws and the initial conditions, I really would like them to be explained within the observable universe that I see. It's not a mystery that the multiverse was proposed because it's a way that we can do statistical science as experiments as we always do. And since we have only one universe this time, you just interpret it as, okay, there could be other universes, and the probability of ours is increased for this reason. So I guess it's a matter of taste. The other discomfort that it gives to me is that if we stop asking because there is the explanation of the multiverse, we may be losing an explanation that we might still get to if we don't stop questioning why these initial conditions and keep on asking. So I can imagine, sometimes I think about myself when I'm tired, it's the end of the day and I haven't yet gotten to the answer or whatever solution that I wanted to get to. And then I kind of feel a bit lazy because I want to go home. And then, well, okay, this is the answer. Yeah, let's go home tomorrow. It starts again. So it feels a little bit to me like that. I don't think science needs to satisfy our feelings of discomfort. But I really feel there's a danger to stop questioning. If we are satisfied with the multiverse proposal, we might miss that there's something deeper to be explained, and it may take centuries or decades, but I wouldn't like to miss that chance.
So I don't think there's a crisis. I'm not even sure what it would mean for there to be a crisis in physics. There are unanswered questions in physics. Maybe if there are professors who say we shouldn't talk about certain ideas in textbooks, that's a crisis, a different kind of crisis. But there is, you know, something going on that is kind of the opposite of a crisis, which is that our theories are too good, right? We have this debate on falsifiability and stuff like that because traditionally we had theories that were relatively straightforward to test. And I think this lulled us into a false sense of security, and scientists not being very philosophically trained. There is this quote that I read that, you know, if you scratch a physicist about the philosophy of science, you'll find some warmed over shreds of popper that they haven't been thought of very carefully. What's really going on is that we have credences, Bayesian credences, in different ways the universe could behave. And we've been in a situation traditionally where, again, it was pretty straightforward to see what we would have to do to drive those credences towards zero or one. With things like the multiverse or many worlds or things like that, the fundamental description of the theory involves elements that it is hard to know how we could drive our credences to zero or one. To me, that's just, you know, something you got to suck it up and deal with, because it could be true that the universe could literally be a multiverse. That's just to dismiss that because we don't know how to shift our credences seems like a fundamentally anti-scientific attitude to me. But I'm very, very happy if individual people say I'm not interested in working on that because it's too speculative and long-term a project.
So, you ready for the next question, or are you getting ready?
Answer this question. Just one sec. And but there was two questions here, and I think we're sort of answering the secondary one. And I did have one thing to say about that, is I don't think I would want to be the professor to teach the multiverse section after, because what you're going to get into, is Sean's alluding to this, is problems of confirmation, corroboration, falsifiability. And you're going to, at best, run a course on philosophy of science. And you're going to probably undermine a lot of what you've already done. The other question, though, that I think you raise, which it kind of amazes me that we haven't addressed it, is what is the problem that we're trying to address in these sessions on the direction of time? And it could be several things. And I don't have an answer. I can think of several problems. There's the old problem of why we have several different arrows of time, so to speak, and why are they all pointing in the same direction? Why does the arrow of time here the same as the one on, you know, in another galactic cluster? Why does it seem to be? Could we tell if it wasn't, with the uniformity? So let me pass that down if anybody else wants to fill this out, because I think it's an important, we're worried about whether the past hypothesis explains, solves this problem, but we haven't said what the problem actually is. David?
Yeah, I mean, I think, of course, science could develop in a way that these kinds of things turn out not to be the case, but I take it, you know, the assumption that was underlying my talk is, yeah, we're referring to all of those problems. And what there is excitement about, to the extent that there is excitement, is the thought that fairly simple claims about the initial state of the universe and so on, claims either that can be derived from deeper theories or that you know are fundamental in and of themselves, might be able to explain all those things. There are lots and lots of formulations of this problem. There are lots of different aspects that one can point to. And what's especially interesting is there are you know, there are aspects of this directionality which sound on the face of it very, very different from one another and very, very far from one another. The thrust of the kind of project I was describing was a way of seeing that they're all very intimately related to one another. And as it were, the evidence that they're all intimately related to one another is that you can make one simple posit which entails them all.
Okay, so I'm going to draw a picture for my question. So the flow of the conversation a little while back gave me a way of re-expressing my concern about things that Sean and Tim talked about. So I'm just going to reproduce this figure up high where people can see it. So we have this picture of entropy as a function of time. And then we were talking about, well, let's just find one Hubble time somewhere on this time axis and see how things look. So let's put it here, Hubble time. Now, the thing is, the poor schmuck who lives in this Hubble time is going to say, so what state am I in here? And if he makes a step mech argument, he's going to say, I'm probably in this state. And so I guess I'm asking Sean or Tim to tell me, what do you tell this guy? You say, oh, because I happen to formally choose a minimum point here. You happen to inherit a past hypothesis because of some formal argument? Or what do you tell this person who's wondering, what state am I in my universe? So that's another way of saying my concern about these kind of arguments.
Yeah, so I think that's just always a concern. I mean, no matter what your theory of anything is, much less your theory of everything, there are many pasts that are compatible with the macroscopic information we have about the present, such that the actual past is radically different than our reconstruction of the past. And I borrow the term from David of cognitive instability for the large majority of those theories, that there is a way of thinking about the past, which is, this is why we call it a past hypothesis, not a past observation, right? We have, let's look at something very concrete, the anisotropies of the CMB. And we say, well, clearly the CMB was very smooth early on because we observe it, and the temperature is almost exactly the same everywhere. That's false in and of itself, because there are many more highly inhomogeneous configurations of the CMB that give us an isotropic radiation field nearby with weird cancellations between the temperature from different effects. We don't think that those are true. Why? Well, because if they were true, then everything we think about the past is false, including our reconstruction of all the laws of physics and the laws of logic and everything. Well,
and then it's a matter of taste, I think. What is going to help this poor schmuck?
There is a matter of taste, but let me just, so I'll give you my taste. You can always say, and many people do say, and option two here implements the idea, the past hypothesis is just a fact, and there isn't any more underlying way to explain it. And so I don't rule out that possibility. I think
that's how this sounds as well.
Okay, but so to me, what the past hypothesis is indicating is that it is a clue to help us understand a more comprehensive view of the universe than we currently have. That is to say, if I don't want to accept it as a pure fact, even though I might have to, can I find cosmological scenarios in which this condition naturally arises? And I think without making any fine-tuning of the state or the Hamiltonian or anything like that. And I think that at a formal level, yes, we can find such systems, and then the work is that what the real world is like or not?
So you use the word natural, I'm not sure. Anyway, I think it's a matter of taste, whether, I guess your list number 2 and 3 are really accurate. I would say it's a matter of interpretation.
So let me just point out where the difference between Sean's model and our model is, he's talking about an ensemble interpretation or a statistical interpretation. At least he has a reduced density matrix and he takes the entropy of that reduced density matrix. And for that, of course, what you say applies. In our model, we don't look at ensembles, we look at one particular solution. And in this particular solution, it has a past point. It's just one. We're not looking at an ensemble of solutions. We're looking at one particular one. And each one of them has a past point. No, let me go to your picture here. So you're saying we are here, and this is we just see this point here. What Andy was saying was we are here. How do we tell the difference between this and that scenario? And we can't. There is no. If this is entropy, and if you have an ensemble interpretation or an ignorance interpretation of this entropy, then there is no way how you can. If you just have the coarse-grained information that you need for this macro state here. Then this is ignorance. Then this is the most probable explanation, more probable than that one.
And the most probable is that you're at the minimum.
The most probable is that you're actually at the minimum. Yes, but
yeah,
but in
that, no, I mean I've been puzzled about the kind of thing that
but in the
here too. If what we're saying is we just have the dynamical equations of motion and we have something like a statistical postulate, then why doesn't the usual reversibility objection mess us up?
I'm not defending now. Sean's argument, now I'm going to start to defend mine. So what we are saying is we take one particular. We say the universe has one particular realization, and if you're here and if you know the microstate here, you know exactly
good.
Where the complexity.
Everybody agrees on that.
Is it going to be a generic feature of these models that?
You know, that a macro state with this sort of median entropy, its entropy rises towards the future.
There's the difference.
Because
if you say median entropy, you could just say, well, we're here.
Here was the question I was going to ask. Okay. If we have some equivalent of an H2, okay, if we have some equivalent of a claim that a generic state, okay, that are non maximal entropy states, the entropy is going to rise toward the future. If we also have time reversal symmetry in the microscopic equations of motion, okay, then we're done. Exactly. Then we're back in the reversibility paradox. Then we're back with the claim that it's overly likely that a situation where
and
then, if we don't add a past paradox, that's puzzling.
Here you're asking, how do we avoid the time reversal argument? Right?
Yeah.
And
one has to make to be careful not to make confusion between our notion of our own time. Gravitational, and it doesn't have to do with ensembles,
microstate. I don't know why everybody's talking about ensembles. There's no ensembles going on.
We're not
There's
talking about entropy here. We're talking about a different paradigm.
No, but we're hoping that it's eventually going to be relevant.
Yes, the fact that there are attractors in the dynamics. This is what determines our time. In every solution has a central state that is distinguished and two directions away from that, every single dynamical solution. Here you don't do statistical considerations because it's a single dynamical solution which you could, in principle, know exactly.
All I'm saying
now,
is
there is an thermodynamic in error time. We think that one, it makes sense to talk about that only for subsystems.
So how are they related?
They are related because the system clusters. And then here there's a concept that is not very popular nowadays, but I think it's still very interesting and useful, is that of a branch system that Reichenbach introduced. You can avoid the time reversal argument by finding a system which has this property that subsystems in which entropy can be defined because they are confined are branched out of this main system. So they are created at some point. So if you follow backwards your thermodynamical arrow time, for example, for our galaxy, which is a confined system because it's gravitationally bound, you won't find that it will reach a minimum and grow up again in the past, because before reaching that state, the system will spread out, its components will mix up with the rest of the universe.
Let me see if I
can deflate it.
So on this picture, the way of avoiding the reversibility argument is just to deny that the universe as a whole can be associated with any entropy.
Yes, precisely.
That doesn't, that's not...
Well, let me.
I think, well, my take on this is that when you talk about, say, having observer time, of course, we don't observe just, well, we observe things in the past light bulb, which goes back when the universe was much smaller than it is now. Now, you can argue that, well, the question of, well, maybe it's more probable that it's just some accident that the microwave background looks nearly isotropic. But I think what I would say then is that we want to supplement sort of a past hypothesis with a hypothesis that we are not in a special place in the universe. In other words, that what we see is typical of what other people, other civilizations would see, at least within the visible universe. So you may or may not like that hypothesis, but it seems to me that's a way around these issues.
No, I would like to answer your question, how do I avoid time reversal symmetry in this model? If you look at the equations of motion, so I say how does the configuration change, how does the direction of change of the configuration changes, and how does the curvature of the curve on shape space change. So that I need all three of these data is what I need to describe the curve at any given point. If I were to just naively time reverse, then I would just reverse, the configuration would be the same. The direction of change would be inversed. I would do a polar inversion on the celestial sphere and shape space and go in the opposite direction. So I would do indicate that by a symbolic minus sign there. But the curvature would not change. I draw you the thing for the three body problem, which is the simplest relational problem that you have. There the attractors are that two particles are getting close together and the third particle is getting far away. This is for the zero energy that two particles come close together. So the generic solution curve looks something like this. It spirals in to one of these, or it comes out of one of these. Then it goes all over shape space, and eventually it can fall into the same attractor, but generically it falls into a different attractor, which means here particle 1 and 2 are close together, here particle 1 and 3 are close together, and the remaining particle is shut out. If I were to just do formal time reversal on this, in this sense, then I would say, oh, I'm here. Ah, I'm I should be at a curve that is here that has the same curvature, but this is now a different solution curve, your argument, and I would end up in a solution that ends up here. So it's not the same solution, and even if I am here, I still have to go on this different solution. I have to go through this minimal point here, because this point exists in every solution. And so specifying this data and noticing that no matter what solution you're on, each solution has this minimal point. Once you are close to one of these attractors, the most likely thing is that this time reversal argument will bring you into a different solution that started out with a different asymptotic attractor. And to connect the two, you had to go through this minimal point.
So I'm not sure I understand. Just tell me which of the questions had a really simple structure, okay? Suppose you have an argument that generic trajectories, you have some macro state. You have some macro state here. And you have an argument that generic trajectories passing through here look like this toward the future, okay? Moreover, your theory is time reversal symmetric, okay? It just seems to follow immediately, without any further details, that generic trajectories passing through here look like this.
It's what you mean by generic. And so the argument is constructed the other curve.
Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, this is we're taking out the r to the 3n from the Liouville measure that I talked about before, changes the picture completely.
But I think it's an order of limits thing. So I think Sean put down the curve first and then said, threw all some dice and said, where am I?
Right.
And instead, if you say, I am here,
right,
what are the trajectories?
Right. Right.
Then it's
right.
A different
right.
Picture.
So why
do you do that?
Right.
You don't need this.
So the point is that in this, the ambition for this kind of scenario, in my mind, as Andy just more or less said, is you replace the postulate, the statistical postulate and the past hypothesis with a particular actual history of the universe. And the entropy of the whole universe will have this form, but the question you ask is, given some macroscopic information about some subset of the universe, which might appear many, many times in that history of the universe, what are the likely trajectories that go through that macro state? And there's no reason to think it should be anything like uniform in the Liouville measure or anything like that. It will generically have the feature that the entropy goes up in one direction and down the other direction. So you have a different measure on the microstates within each macro state because you're conditionalizing on a specific cosmological trajectory.
You mean on a specific micro-trajectory?
For the whole universe, yes. There is something the universe does.
Right.
Given that thing, rooms like this with people like us in it could appear many, many times. But with overwhelming probability, when it appears, it's because there was a Big Bang 14 billion years in one direction.
In a view like this, we put a piece of ice on the floor, and we want to know how to decide what expectations to have about it 10 minutes from now.
Right.
What we're supposed to do is consult the exact microstate of the universe. That's what we're supposed to do.
No, there's a, you can derive that when blocks of ice like that appear, it's
right.
Probably because there was a Big Bang 14 billion years ago with a low entropy.
There'll be many occasions when they appear in this exact microsolution. I see. So the probabilities are all, the probabilities get shifted completely
yes.
from probabilities about what the microstate, what the micro trajectory of the universe is to self-locating probabilities about our position on it.
Okay, thank you.
I'm going to change topic if I may. I would like to weave the different things we heard during the day and see how they talk to one another, if I may. Because we started with David giving a picture about how We can make sense of the preferred direction of time by adding to a time reversal invariant microphysics pass hypothesis. Then we also heard, I'm not going in order, then we also heard arguments saying, no, wait a minute, that's, we don't like that. We think that there should be something sort of intrinsically time reversal invariant for some reason in the deep dynamic of the universe, and an argument in that sense.
Non-invariant, yeah.
Non-invariant. So now it seems to me that what we have heard at the end from Tim and Sean counts. Independent of the detail, does this work, does not work, in theory, is it real, not real, or is this the right story, count for the first point of view, not for the second point of view. So against the idea that there is a intrinsic, deep, dynamical breaking of time inverse invariance in the universe. And I would like the comments of people on that.
I would say yes, it does.
Well,
yes, it does count against the idea we need to fundamentally violate reversibility.
Yeah. Oh, I see. Right.
Okay. I, of course, that's that it does, because that's what they believe. So, of course, it counts towards their point. It wouldn't count towards ours. But so I feel that this definitely is a proposition that could ameliorate the status of initial conditions. So I'm not, in no way am I fixed on one direction that time needs to be irreversible. I would like to see proof that it was not. It's much more comfortable, and I would be go home a lot happier. I would like for us to think what can constitute a proof for one or for the other. And so could we devise an experiment for time symmetry to prove a time symmetry, time symmetric, fully, deeply time symmetric dynamics, or devise an experiment that proves that, well, to prove time asymmetry, it's more difficult because we argue that it's fundamental and some quantum gravity regime, so that would be more difficult. But so could I ask for those who defend time symmetries, is there an experiment that shows that I could look at and shows there's an absolutely no element of irreversibility in this experiment in the laboratory? This is fully time reversible. There's no dissipation. There's no subtlety. Nothing to throw out. If I saw something like that, I'd be fully convinced that there is at least one realization in the world of a fully time reversible dynamics, and that would convince me.
So good. This is a good question to probe a little bit. I'm really confused about what the big deal is about whether, you know, about whether the dynamics is exactly time reversal symmetric or not. There are plenty of fundamental dynamical theories that I'm very interested in. For example, there's an attempt to solve the quantum mechanical measurement problem by writing down exact dynamics for a collapse of the wave function. This is due to three Italian physicists, Gherardi, Ramini, and Weber. That's time reversal asymmetric. As it happens, if you want to do statistical mechanics with that, it makes statistical mechanics much simpler in a beautiful way. You can just remove the statistical postulate. It doesn't allow you to remove the past hypothesis. You still need the past hypothesis. But just hang on one second. But hang on one second. So it's easy to write down experiments. I mean, they're hard to do, but it's easy to say what would be empirically necessary in order, for example, to distinguish between the GRW theory, which is time reversal asymmetry. What do you mean, why are they hard to do? because we can write down, we can examine the theories and ask what experiments we need to do, and it turns out that they're hard.
Irreversibilities, you would need to polish to infinity something and then slide away in the most true
No. That's to rule out any irreversibility. But But there's something deeper here that I don't understand. There's something deeper here that I don't understand. I don't want to put words in anybody's mouth, so maybe I'm just wrong here. But here's my impression. What the people who are opposed to this program feel sure that they see in nature is not merely violations of time reversal symmetry. There's something much deeper and harder to put your finger on that has to do with very fancy philosophical ideas of becoming and of passage. I don't think, I think that if you were presented with, say, the GRW theory, okay, you wouldn't see it as coming any closer to meeting your desiderata for a theory than a perfectly time reversal symmetric theory would. I don't want to put words in anybody else's mouth, but as far as I can tell, it isn't that you have some deep intuition that it isn't that the world presents itself to you as if its microscopic equations of motion fail to be time reversal symmetric. That's fine. And a time reversal asymmetric theory fits into the program that I was describing just fine. I think that what you guys think, but of course it's up to you to tell me if that's true or not, is that the world presents itself to you in such a way, in a way that is incompatible with a sort of block universe conception of the world. Now, time reversal asymmetric theories can live perfectly happily in block universe conceptions of the world. A theory like GRW lives perfectly happily in a block universe conception of the world. It sounds to me as if that's not what your problem with existing physics is. It isn't that they've gravitated towards time reversal symmetric dynamics. It's something much more profound than that. That the whole conception of time, something, maybe a clean way to put it is, something radically incompatible with a block universe picture. But if you want incompatible with a block universe picture, time reversal asymmetry is not going to do it for you. The GRW theory is perfectly compatible.
Now let me make a comment. I mean, you ask about experiments that verify time reversal, and there's an enormous history of that. I published my article on that subject in 1969. We did a very sensitive test for time reversal invariance. It's been a holy grail to find some violation of time reversal, so it's no longer any good to simply do it in electromagnetism. You have to look at it in the weak interaction, look in the strong interaction. So those aren't what you were asking for.
Symmetry is put in by hand. When you discard the fact that there can be no
hand. Yeah, that, I don't know, but that's part of the theory. That's part of the
theory. There's no part of the
theory. Of course it is.
That's made built into that makes it time asymmetric.
Yeah, but the correct theory of the world is time asymmetric.
Oh.
There's a past hypothesis. Yes, of course, but I don't think that's what I don't think that's what you guys want.
And also address the question that Adam raises: is there a crisis? And for me, speaking as a high energy theorist, as a particle theorist, the answer to why I'm interested in fundamental time asymmetry has to do with the crisis in elementary particle physics. And with the fact that we have no explanation for the 29 parameters, dimensionless parameters of the standard model, and all the explosion of theoretical work in the last 40 years has done, apparently, given the results at the OHC, nothing to enlighten us as to by what mechanism, by what physics those parameters are set. So because of that and similar issues, interested in entertaining the idea that the answer to the question of how the parameters of the laws of physics are chosen, You know what I have to say, David? It has something to do with some dynamical mechanism acting on the laws, some evolutionary mechanism acting on the laws. And I'm interested in whether that has ramifications which might show up as both violations of time reversal symmetry and as explanations of the past hypothesis.
So this is similar to David's line of questioning earlier, but it's from what we observe, the universe itself is very asymmetric. And of course, physicists have discovered that it's very useful to find dynamical laws that are exposed in underlying symmetry. And so I'm just interested in very general terms, why, so I don't know who would want to address this, but there's a strategy of looking for symmetries and then finding reasons to explain the observed asymmetries. And so the question is similar to David's, why is it in the case of time asymmetry in particular that the shoe rubs, right? So why is it that the bump under the rug gets pushed up in the case of early universe cosmology in particular? So there's one reason which might be the block universe question, you know, is it an opposition to an understanding of the nature of time in particular? It might be because the cosmology is dealing with the totality of the universe at once, and you think that dealing with a full set, the whole universe at once raises particular problems. So I'm just curious, why is it that in cosmology, in the case of time symmetry, the sort of questions have a different flavor than other cases where you look for underlying symmetries even though the world is asymmetric?
Everything I just said addressed you precisely that.
Yes. Yeah,
so cosmology is the stage by which the laws of elementary particle physics must be set, and if there's a dynamics of laws or parameters, it happens on a cosmological scale.
Okay. And Marina, is that similar to your
book? I have worked together with Lee that
shows why cosmology is different from all other systems, because you can't simply say the person that came before me set up the system this way and I don't know anything about them. The conditions were these. I started my experiment and there it went. So in cosmology, there you are at the beginning of the universe, and you can't say anymore, oh, this is the initial conditions, those who came before me, the state was already this one, so I don't know what happened, something else is to blame. And so in cosmology, you're stuck, there's nothing before the Big Bang, or if you choose to take that assumption. I'm not sure, but I'm more comfortable with one than many. I'm not sure if there's many Big Bangs or not. The other thing is cosmology is the only science where if you want to do the theory of the whole universe, we can't do, so the whole universe in the sense of there's no two subsystems, I don't look at half the universe first and then the other half. If I want to understand the whole universe, it's really, we can't do frequentist science in the sense of chopping it up and then, oh, looking at this one, and then inferring a law. So the whole issue of making a cosmological law, or if you want, making cosmological quantum gravity, is really different, and you can really go to the extent of saying that despite the fact that we are used to identify symmetries and patterns in our frequentist sciences, and in this case, I'm not talking frequentists against Bayesian, I'm just talking the usual frequentism, having many systems, many copies to infer law. In that case, when you have just one system, you can even argue that there will not be global fundamental symmetries, because every event in cosmology, be it what it is, what you think cosmology, the universe is made of, every event in cosmology will be different, fundamentally different from all other events. And I could go a little bit into this. This is going into work that we have done and that I referred to before. I didn't want to mention personal work a lot, but if you take the theory of the whole whole universe seriously, then you will at some point have to accept that each event has a different past, it has a different causal family of events leading up to it, and so our typical trick of finding and isolating symmetries and deriving our laws may not work in that sense. And having this said, I also want to frame that I'm your typical cosmologist. I do models of inflation, dark energy, derive constraints from data. I've even been in collaborations of large-scale structure. So I'm not saying that we can't do cosmology anymore because now there's this problem of time asymmetry. But in a sense, it is good to keep an eye and have a part of our brains dedicated to foundational issues in cosmology and what it means, what are we really looking for at the end of the day as cosmologists.
Okay, thanks. So I would just like to point out something here before I ask the next questions. We're running towards the end now, so I'll ask Lisa, her, and Abai and Raphael, so a lot of people. We're going to stay here a long time. But one question that we have skirted around is what role does actual quantum mechanics plays in all this? We've talked about block time and initial conditions. Tim's et al.'s model is basically classical, except the aspect of the Bohmian that Tim... And I wanted to know from the panel, what role do you think quantum mechanics is, how relevant is quantum mechanics in this problem of cosmological time? Is it relevant? Were we doing fine before we had to deal with quantum cosmology, before we couldn't separate anymore? Or at least it becomes ambiguous how to separate a classical like clock variable and subsystems. And I wanted to ask the panel about these considerations. What part of the problem is classical? What part of is quantum mechanical?
Yeah, I think quantum mechanics is crucial to this. Is it not on?
Yeah.
My guess is
quantum mechanics is crucial to this. The simplest way in which that would be evident is if h psi were not equal to zero, because this equation, you know, Schrodinger's equation, there's no end to time automatically, right? Time goes from minus infinity to infinity, like it or not. There's no singularity that you hit. You just chug forward in time and backward in time as far as you want. And if h psi is not zero, then, if h psi is zero, then the possibility of superimposing different large-scale semi-classical configurations lets time emerge in a very natural way. So I think we actually way overrate our ability to get intuition about all these questions by relying on our classical intuition, and I think quantum mechanics is central.
In that respect, let me just point out... what about superposition of causal structures if we're talking about evolution of the universe? That is seems to me a very complicated question that we don't know how to answer.
Yep.
I mean, it goes without saying that, you know, that for example, if people have various different projects for explaining the past hypothesis rather than positing it, to some of those, the difference between classical and quantum mechanical models might not be so crucial, and to others, they may be absolutely crucial. And there's no way to say with much confidence, you know, how crucial quantum mechanics is going to turn out to be. If you look at the architecture I sort of outlined in my talk, where you take the past hypothesis just as a basic law, as a basic postulate, as far as I can tell, that architecture is going to look pretty similar in classical and quantum mechanical cases. Like I said a few minutes ago, there are certain solutions to the quantum mechanical measurement problem which would change the structure a little bit. If you adopted something like the GRW theory, then you could just get rid of the statistical postulate, and the fundamental architecture would only have two components, the dynamics and the past hypothesis, But this is another way, this question is another opportunity to try to understand what the people who don't like this program have in mind a little better. It seems to me that the difference, that vis-a-vis these questions of becoming, vis-a-vis questions of discomfort with a block universe, vis-a-vis this phenomenology of how the world presents itself to us immediately, insofar as I can tell, but I want to ask the people who have these intuitions, the difference between classical mechanics and quantum mechanics makes zero difference. That is, quantum mechanics is absolutely as inadequate to these intuitions of becoming as classical mechanics is. Am I right about that? Am I wrong about that? I'm wrong about that. So,
I will when I talk.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
Yeah, I wanted to say one thing. It's actually not clear to me how you implement the past hypothesis in quantum mechanics and quantum field theory. It doesn't seem to pick at a particular initial state for inflation, for instance. My talk, I did talk about time asymmetry. I don't have any particular interest in becoming. I think to some extent the difference between my view of the past hypothesis and yours is that you tend to think of it as more as law-like in some moods. And
but that's just there's nothing much riding on that. I have this
human
conception of what it is to be a law, statements that are sort of particularly concise and particularly informative about the way the world is count as laws. But you know, if you want to call it something else, I don't, there's nothing much that rides on that.
Right. What I do want to say about quantum mechanics, though, nobody's talked about this yet, though, is that we still have the cosmological constant problem, which is a huge problem in cosmology, not so much in local physics. And that should be addressed by any quantum theory of cosmology, I think, or any attempt at incorporating quantum theory into cosmology, even if the theory of the whole universe isn't quantum. And I'm hoping that somebody is going to talk about that in the next few days.
Well, you said that I presented a model in which was classical. Of course, I would be much happier if this was a quantum model, if it was a fully quantum model. But I'm not sure whether it's necessary. For all we know, quantum mechanics is very well tested in small systems, and we don't see large superpositions. We don't see superpositions of macroscopic objects. So at least at a phenomenological level, we don't need it beyond a certain scale. I mean, probably the largest the largest superpositions in molecules exist or in what I would like would be to see a model because I like concrete models. I don't like just philosophy exploring philosophical ideas that these are logical possibilities. I would like to see how this would play out in a concrete model. What I would like to see is there a model where you can where quantum mechanics would emerge as in a satisfactory way for small enough subsystems, and that at large scales behaves like a good cosmological model.
So again, Lee and I have a paper, which I think was in August of 2013, where based on these very same ideas of fundamental irreversibility, we showed that aspects of quantum mechanics can arise. This was just, it was a very concrete model that started with all these principles for cosmology and the principles of unique events under cosmology. And we showed in that paper that some parts of quantum mechanics arise. It's not a done job. by all means, the aspects of quantum mechanics that I find are very, very crucial for this case of irreversibility is exactly what I hear sometimes people try to set aside, which is the issue of measuring of or interaction with other parts, with other components. For me, every time there is an interaction, that's an irreversible aspect of the system, and that's why quantum mechanical systems show irreversibility every time we look at them. So the symmetry and the reversible evolution is only when we're not looking, only when we're not interacting. So for me, the important lesson of quantum mechanics is that every time you interact with a system, it behaves irreversibly. You can never reverse a measurement.
Look, I don't know exactly where these convictions come from, but we have models of quantum mechanics which incorporate measurements fully, which are designed to solve the measurement problem, like Bohm's theory, which are completely time reversal symmetric. Nothing irreversible ever happens. We have other models of the measurement process, like GRW that we were talking about, that aren't time reversal symmetric. And there may be all kinds of reasons to be interested in those, some of which have to do with statistical mechanics and so on and so forth. But I really don't know where a pronouncement comes from that in quantum mechanics, every time we observe anything or every time any two things interact, something irreversible happens. We have really clear mathematical models of quantum mechanics where that's not true.
So the one model I know of quantum mechanics that is time reversible is the Everett interpretation, or the many worlds. I should study that one. I'm really eager to be convinced. If you can convince me, that's fantastic. What I've heard in your meeting last week, the things I've heard were reversal of measurement. So there was this complicated experimental apparatus to try by all means to preserve this pristine Hamiltonian evolution of the wave function, and you would do this complicated measurements on it, the continuous time measurements, for example, all to preserve this idea of the unitary time evolution. And I find that is not natural whatsoever. It was, this is true, I've heard reversal of measurement, I've heard reversal of stochasticity. It seems to me it's so unnatural to try to reverse something that's already happened and that there was a measurement on the system. I'm not a quantum mechanical theorist, so I'm not going to enter very deeply discussions of this.
Can I ask you this microphone?
Yes. Yes, I can share your feeling. There's this models of undoing a measurement and some which is look sort of baroque. But there is not one. There are at least three totally different ways of looking at quantum mechanics, which are time reversal invariant, and which have a completely different ontologies, so a completely different idea of what is there in the world. One, you may like it, or you may not like it. Sean seems to like it a lot. There's only the quantum state. That's the full thing, and that's obviously time, okay? It has its problem, you may. One, which is perhaps in this context the more convincing, it's Bohmian mechanics, in which you have to say in which sense is time reversible, but it's in a precise sense is time reversible. You have a particle that follows a trajectory for a single particle. You have a wave, and the third one is a relation of quantum mechanics where you have only quantum events. So you don't have a wave function. You don't have at all. You just have the quantum events. You have the probability distribution of the quantum event. This happens. Okay. The events are primary, so you don't need to make the story about the measurement. That is that how they. And there again, it's time reversal invariant. If you look at the sequence of event backward, they are described by the same dynamical theory. So again, it seems to me that the way you answer to that, once again, is, there is something in the way of the world which seems to me primary time-oriented. That's what you keep saying over and over and over again. So I think that, and I'm also talking to Leah that, because this has been a long discussion between Leah and I, which, you know, we've worked together since ever and disagreed on everything since ever. And I think my best work was Leah, and they came from all these disagreements. It seems to me that what we learn from physics is that some of our most intuitively basic conceptual conceptions about the world might be wrong, okay? Of course, they might be right, okay? But it might happen that physics over and over tells us arguments for abandoning them. I mean, there's up and there's down. What's more universal than there's up and down, right? Up and down is fundamental structure of the world. There should be an up of the universe and down the universe. No, there's no up on the universe, down the universe, right? Newtonian mechanics doesn't have an up and down. And so on and so forth, okay? There's an absolute difference between being not moving or moving, and so on and so forth. So why are you resisting so much to the immense and totally surprising, this is a point that Bianca made this morning, and it was made again. Nobody called for time reversal invariant. Newton didn't say, oh, I want a time reversal invariant physics, let's impose it, let's forget everything which is non-time reversal invariant. Galileo, when he put acceleration, didn't say, I want acceleration because it's t squared, so it doesn't change sign with t. Nobody called for this time reversal invariant. It came against everybody's intuition, right? And it came over and over and over again in a way that was absolutely... People thought at the beginning that friction, which is obviously not time reversal invariant, had to be somehow a force to be added, and some time non-reversal feature of the world. It came out, I think, to everybody's surprise, that friction, in fact, can describe in terms of forces which are described by Lagrangian's equations, which are time reversal invariants, and so on and so forth. So it seems to me the quintessential case in which the world, through a large amount of facts that we discover, keep telling us something about the world, which forces us to revise a piece of our basic intuition. There's no fundamental simultaneity, there's no up and down. Right, so... No, it's not a question, it's a preaching, it's a speech.
Do you want an answer or a
So my version of Carlo's speech is there's a story that may or may not be true about Wittgenstein talking to someone, probably one of his acolytes, and he said, why did anyone ever believe that the sun went around the earth rather than just the earth rotating? And the acolyte says, well, it just looks like the sun goes around the earth. And Wittgenstein said, well, what would it have looked like if the Earth rotated? Of course, it looks the same. And I think that the point is, there's an argument, well, look, we look at all these things, and over again in the world, there's something happening in one direction of time and not the other. Well, what would it look like if the fundamental laws were reversible, but there's a past hypothesis the same way? So that's no evidence for or against either version.
Can I ask one question?
So I am a stranger in a strange land. But what do you guys do with the fact that the second law is merely a tendency? Okay, and you all know it. So now what?
That's a very good question.
Well, and I did it at the end of the day.
there's two things. Number one, it's a really good tendency. Number two, we write papers about small systems where it's not even a perfect tendency. And you know that's become extraordinarily important in biophysics and nanoscience and so forth. There are sometimes fluctuations downward. We can quantify them and put them to work.
I think Lee, do you want to say something, Lee?
I'm sensitive to the
sensitive to the hour and to the fact that we have three more days. And I think that it's better to understate than to repeat. So I think Abai should have the last word.
Okay, so I had promised Abai and Raphael if we had a little bit of time for them to have less comments. But
all right, I was very puzzled by the discussion that you and Marina had. I mean, for example, Marina had this beautiful picture of Roger Penrose's, and which says that well, the Big Bang had to be so unlikely, etc. But she dropped the main point of that Roger makes, which is that means that there is a fundamental principle, which is exactly the past hypothesis, which to him was the wild curvature hypothesis. So it's just very weird to me that things were taken. Roger is making an argument for past hypothesis, and it is turned around to say that it's so weird and it cannot. Can I just finish? I mean, I think you. I didn't say much at all so far. The second thing was about you all agree that this is very. This is a very ambitious project. So of course, understandable, it is in the very beginning and not. With a lot of work to be done still. But the whole idea, as I understood it at least, the idea would be that this is something that would be, perhaps shed light on quantum gravity at a very, very fundamental level, that there might be actually fundamentally dynamics might be time reversal, not invariant. But you all agreed that, but the effective theories emerge and they have this time reversal invariance and everything and something. But surely, the egg is not described by quantum gravity. I mean, it is, but that's not. The effective theory description of the egg and the quantum gravity description of the egg better be the same. Otherwise, your quantum gravity theory is wrong. And that effective, please answer in a second. And that effective field theory is certainly, is the standard one. So I don't understand the main points, I think.
So just to address that point, it does behoove us to my understanding of Roger Penrose's hypothesis is that the vial curvature hypothesis is to come out of quantum gravity, that quantum gravity is, Roger argues, and we certainly wish Roger were here, inherently time asymmetric. And an aspect of the time asymmetry of the fundamental theory of quantum gravity is the imposition of the vial curvature hypothesis when the level of description becomes that of general relativity. So it is not a replacement or a synonym for the past hypothesis. It would be an explanation, at least an aspect of that past hypothesis. But you're absolutely right. If quantum gravity has a strong time asymmetry, why don't we see that in the effective classical theory that comes from quantum gravity, which is general relativity? So one of the projects that we asked ourselves developing out of this is there a modification of general relativity which incorporates time asymmetry, which could be used to model and to look for time asymmetric effects in the early universe. Andrew Little will talk about that. We invented a class of such consistent modifications of general relativity that have time asymmetry built into them, that have cosmological implications.
Yeah, that is not the point I was making. So I quite agree that their fundamental theory could be time reversal in time asymmetric, and yet the effective theories would be time symmetric. That I'm agreeing with. But I'm saying that the argument that has been given for time asymmetry involved the egg, which I think is extremely well described by our ordinary, by effective field theory, or in fact classical mechanics. So, the statement was about the argument that was being made, not about the hope. Hope I'm very sympathetic
Marina,
about.
Do you want to defend that argument, the egg argument? But before that, let me just say, the point I'm disagreeing with you, the point is that if quantum gravity is fundamentally time asymmetric, and if then we might see it in a time asymmetric modification of the classical theory of gravity, and therefore it's interesting that there are consistent time asymmetric extensions of general relativity, which are still consistent dynamical systems that have four consistent constraints, 2 degrees of freedom per point, et cetera, which are, however, have a time asymmetry, which leads to observable effects possibly in the early universe. And again, Andrew, if you're talking about that tomorrow, I won't say more about that today.
I think you should go on my own
subject. Okay, maybe we should.
Yeah, maybe.
Because I just understood
Abe was saying. So your question is, if I think that the egg breaking is the lead that is giving the time asymmetry in the fundamental description, obviously all regimes, we can't infer intuition about fundamental regimes from something that we see in an effective regime. The argument that I made was, if when the egg breaks and shows a strong arrow of time, and we try to describe that by symmetrical laws, that leads to an issue of the initial conditions popping up in the early universe. But I think there's nothing wrong with the theory, the macroscopic theory that describes the egg breaking. Effective field theories are also what they are, they're effective. The proposal is, could there be a way to explain the initial conditions if we give up the idea of time symmetry in the fundamental regime? So that would, of course, we don't want to propose to resolve quantum gravity with the egg breaking.
Okay, on that note, I think we should call it a day. It's late. Let's all have dinner. Let's thank the panel speakers again.